Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to the world's longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net. If you like what you hear today, you can subscribe at iTunes. And you can download or listen at a variety of places where I'm sure you can also subscribe. And these are SoundCloud, Audioboom, Spreaker and YouTube. And of course, the website, CelticUnderground.net. The contributors to the site and occasional contributors to the podcast can be found on Twitter. There is the long-running at Celtic Rumours Twitter feed. And then there is also myself at Harry Brady CU. There is at Hullboy, at Lackeymore1, and the catchiest of all, at Stephen62572390. Now, is that man with a fantastic Twitter name who's doing the podcast this week? So, this is enough from me, Harry Brady. Over to him, St. Anthony, who will do the usual guest introductions.
It's my absolute pleasure to be joined by the Hibs, Celtic and Scotland legend, Pat Stanton. Pat, we always start by asking, what was your first football game you attended and who was your first football hero?
Oh, well, I would start coming here. My dad would bring me here to Easter Road, and Joe Baker was my hero. You know, that was the...
Joe Baker, who played for England.
Played for England while playing at Easter Road. That's which right. Takes a bit of doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it must have broke their heart. There wasn't a better centre forward than there. So. but he was my hero. And I got, as years went by, I joined the club and I met Joe. And, you know, your heroes maybe can let you.
Because Joe had two stints that he came back.
Came back
when you were a player.
Yeah, but he was a terrific player. Him and Dennis Law went to Torino. Mm-hmm. But he used to draw up outside the Easter Road there, and he had a big Vauxhall Cresta with the white wheels and the white wall tyres, and smartly dressed, you know, really good, like a film star. And but he could play, so he could have any kind of car as far as I was concerned.
So, would you remember the famous five team, or was that just maybe before your time?
I can vaguely remember them, because I can remember I was here. I can remember coming to see Hibs playing like Reims. Mm-hmm. Oh, these teams when Hibs had been invited into the European Cup, because I think that was when I think Aberdeen were the champions, and I don't think they, for some reason they didn't take part in it. They got the European Cup, and Hibs went into it, and I can remember coming here to see that great side and the Reims side, who got beat in the final with Real Madrid. Raymond Cooper playing centre forward for Reims, but great nights. But great to see these players, but I was just quite young at the time, you know, so you wouldn't really appreciate what was going on in front of you.
Now, you're a Hibs man through and through, and understand you're related to Hibs' first ever captain. Mm-hmm. Is it Michael Whelehan?
Michael Whelehan, aye, that's right, aye, because they all lived in just up the Canongate bit, or the Irish people settled in that area, you know.
Where would that be now then?
It would be just where St Patrick's Church is, just up Holyrood Road there. And that was where they sort of lived there.
So would that have been a traditional Hibs support?
That's right, from that part. And it was, that was where it was started, up there. Because I think one of their first meetings was in St Mary Street Hall, which is just round the corner for St Pat's. But that was the area. Where a lot of the Irish people settled and we started up a football team.
You must be proud of that. That's quite a heritage.
Yeah, it's only when you, at least my dad would mention it in the passing, you know. He came for that set of that part of the town as well, but it's only later on when you realise what was involved and your attachment to the club. At the time you maybe didn't
appreciate it. So you signed for Hibs, obviously, and that was your major club. So that would have been just before Jockstein?
That's right. Well, Jockstein tried to sign me for Dunfermline. I was playing juvenile football for Salveson Boys Club. And Jock came over to it was Old Meadow Bank to speak to myself and my dad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted me to go and play for Dunfermline because I played a trial for them. My dad wanted me to come here, which mm-hmm. I did eventually. But that was, big joke trying to get me to go there. And eventually, in later years, further down the line, I did mm-hmm. go. Mm-hmm. He came here, so I played under him here. And at the end of my career, I went through and played with him at Celtic. So I don't suppose there was many players played under him twice.
Twice. That's right. Now, sadly for Hibs' point of view, Jock wasn't there long before he moved on to Celtic, but you were fortunate enough to play in two great Hibs sides. The first one was it was Colin Steen, Peter Maranello, Peter Cormack, you and Jim O'Rourke, which looked as if it was going to do things, but the way things often are with Scottish clubs, Maranello left, Steen went to Rangers, and Peter Cormack left.
That's right.
So that must have been disappointing.
It was, but that was just the way of things, you know. Good players moved on, and but the Steen, when Steen came here in, say, maybe about 1963-64, when he came from Dunfermline, mm-hmm. we had a good side. People like Eric Stevenson, Neil Martin, John McNamee,
mm-hmm.
We had a real good side then. Well, beat Real Madrid here in albeit a friendly,
mm-hmm.
but. That was a good side as well. Willie Hamill, who came for Airdrie, terrific player. That was a good side because we went. I remember that season we went to Ibrox, and the same week we played Real Madrid. We beat Real Madrid 2-0 here, and we went to Ibrox on the Saturday and beat Rangers 4-2.
Mm-hmm.
That was within a matter of 4 or 5 days.
You mentioned McNamee there. He was in a shrinking violet, was he?
No, John. Just a terrific player, Big John. You know, he was a really good player. But when you think of John, you think of a big, tough guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was Airdrie or Colton Bridge he came for, but he was a good player,
mm-hmm.
a really good player. And I played alongside him at the back, you know, and he was a big help to me.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a better player than a lot of people thought.
So did Eddie Turnbull come back as Hibs manager in the early 70s? And Hibs came to the fore again with the Turnbull Tornado side,
mm-hmm.
and you know that when you think of some of the notable results they had, you beat Sporting Lisbon 7-1 mm-hmm. at a time, you know, the Portuguese football wasn't high,
mm-hmm.
and also you remember the famous one against Hearts when you won 7-0 as well,
mm-hmm.
you won the League Cup in December 72, and there was a wee feeling at that point Hibs were the verge of something really big,
yeah.
but it didn't quite
happen. That's no. right. Aye. We had a game where I think. I'm trying to think what happened. Alec Edwards got sent off, John Brownlee broke his leg, and I don't think that helped matters, but I felt we should have done more than we did there, because that team was capable of that. But looking back at that one that you mentioned, the Sporting Lisbon game, I remember playing over there, and it was the only time, every other time I played for Hibs, it was a green and white jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But that night we played, I'd wore a purple jersey,
yep, yep.
with the white sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the best Hibs team I had played in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That team that night in Lisbon, they beat us 2-1. We played really well. We could have played anybody that night.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a story about the 7-0 game at Tynecastle. It was New Year's Day, and I remember my dad let me stay up late because mm-hmm. the football was coming on, but Neil J, you didn't know what game you were going to get.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's Hibs and Hearts, and my dad said, this will be good, with local derby, you know, big crowd. 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, and it got to 7, and we were gobsmacked, mm-hmm. you know, especially at Tynecastle.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad saying, you'll remember this, because this is history you're watching.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that's never been seen and probably might never be seen again.
Yeah, well, we had played. It was that time of the year you played two or three games, sort of quite close to one another. And we had played Aberdeen here at Easter Road. I'm trying to remember. I think we beat them 2-1 or something like that. It was a close score.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been a lot more than that. And I remember speaking to Jimmy O'Rourke when just not long after it, just a couple of hours after it. He says, you know, somebody's going to catch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened we went to Tynecastle. Mm-hmm. And to be fair to Hearts had a couple of chances early on, which they missed.
Hearts were only a poor team at the time, it has to be said.
A good side, yeah.
You know, like Donald Ford and Alan Andersons and Jim Cruikshanks.
That's right. But I can remember one of the guys saying, you know, he said, this is what you dream about when you're a wee laddie. You know, Hibs support at Tyne Castle on New Year's Day and you're 5 up.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Turnbull says, no, no, he says, you go out and you beat them again,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Rub it in.
Yeah. Well, what he did say, and he was right, he says, whatever you do, then don't make a fool of them. He says, these people have got their pride.
Yeah.
He says,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And he was quite right, and he's summing up what was going to happen. He says, they'll come at you. He says, you know, this was the second half, they're 5 down. He says, they've got their pride, they'll come at you, so expect it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and just sit and wait on them. And exactly as he said, he expected it or something. Never at any time did Hibs just play around with the ball and make a fool of him. Had enough respect for these players and that, and then, you know, and chances cropped up later on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the League Cup final in 72 was a big thing, the major silverware. It's also worth pointing out that Hibs beat Celtic in 2 Drybra Cup finals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in those days, Drybra Cup was a pre-season thing, but it was still a prestigious final at Hampden, and it was silverware.
That's right.
So, you know, in that close period of time, that fine Celtic team of the 70s, Hibs turned them over 3 times.
That's right, yeah. That's right, I remember these games. You know, you talk about the cups, but there were cups, and the clubs were taking part in them. And Celtic don't go into anything without trying to win it.
Absolutely.
So you've got that to contend with. They had a lot of good players, and even the Rangers, we played them sort of in the earlier part of it. It was great winning these things, you know. And obviously, the League Cup, the first cup they'd won in about 70 odd years or something through there, you know. So that was a big one, that.
But you know, that I remember it was televised at the time, and it was a big occasion, and Hibs got a lot of publicity through that. You know, that was a big achievement in that thing.
Yeah. Well, I scored that day, and Jimmy O'Rourke scored that day, and both of us played in the same team at school at Holy Cross Academy.
Mm.
So for the two pupils to actually get all the way to Hampden and score the goals. But I remember in that game, what sticks out to me is, Celtic scored, I'm trying to think how long there was to go.
It's quite late on.
Kenny scored.
That's right. It was maybe 10-12 minutes to go.
It was a long wait.
Mm.
A long wait, you know.
So Eddie Turnbull, a great success as a Hibs manager, but I've read things in interviews, guys, he wasn't always an easy guy to go on with, was he?
Oh no, I think he would even admit that himself. He wasn't the easiest people to go on with, you know. He wanted to do well, you know, and how we all wanted to do well, but I felt at times he was trying to make players do that they weren't able to do, you know. I found that the times I was under Steen never asked you to do anything you couldn't do, you know. He knew your limitations, and he got you to stick to them, and yeah, that's what he did.
But he knew you were good at it as well.
Yeah, and he just knew it, actually. And but other I think sometimes Eddie trying, you know, square pegs in round holes, and it didn't quite work that way.
Mm-hmm. And Steen and Turnbull, I don't think they got on so well, did they?
No, but I think there was a respect, and that's where it stopped. But
so what would have been the problem then between the two of them? Was it personality clashes?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so, because Eddie had a great knowledge of the game, as did Steen. But I think if you were asking me, you know, in a dressing room, Steen could handle the dressing room, handle the players, all the different personalities. And you could have a disagreement with him.
Mm-hmm.
Know that you had to be brave to have a disagreement with Joe. But once the disagreement was over, that was it over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he held grudges. I felt maybe at times if you didn't go along with Eddie, or you had a disagreement, he tended maybe not to forget about it. And that didn't help matters.
Mm. So we can't mention the Celtic Hibs Cup finals without saying that Celtic handed out a couple of doings to Hibs in cup finals, but as you can see in your face, it's still bringing back pain.
Now,
as a Celtic fan, like, we recall them fondly because Celtic clicked on the day and really played well, but that Hibs team with the talent they had, did you underachieve in the finals?
Yes, we didn't. We didn't take part in them. and that's it. There's no excuses. I think one of the games we had a lot of chances, but we didn't take any of them. But on the, you know, if we're being truthful, it hurts even now. We just didn't turn up on the day. And I think Steen had changed a wee couple of wee things in his team where we didn't change anything. But at the end of the day, it's the players in the park, and you've got to want to win. And it's just, people can talk about tactics and oh this, that and the next thing, but you've got to have 11 players out there who think they can win. On the day we didn't do it.
And we have to mention Dixie Deans as well, which again will bring back painful memories. But the point I'm going to make is, was it just one of the things with Dixie? Or, you must have tried in some way to stop him.
Oh, that's right. He was a real goal scorer, you know. I could have seen him fan enough at times, but it just happened on the day. Just happened. That was it.
Some guys have you know, a lucky team, you know, and they score a lot of goals. And because Dixie, funny enough, never scored against Rangers.
Well, because there was one goal in particular, I can't remember which game it was, but somebody had a shot and it was actually going wide. And Dixie headed it back in. It was going for a pie and it suddenly ended at the back of the net. But it was just, they had really good players, so did we, but on the day we didn't do it.
Now, you get 16 caps for Scotland and you captain your country 3 times. And I know that it's. Probably ties in a wee bit with the Lisbon Lions, because there's players that you look at and you think, how did they not get more caps? So my point would be to you is that it must have been difficult, because you were a right half, and at the time you had Billy Bremner, Bobby Murdoch, John Gregg, maybe Davy Haight and Pat Crerm in the early stages, all fighting for that one jersey, if you like. So I mean, the competition was fierce.
Oh, that's right. When you rattle off these names, I think even getting 16 you did well when you consider some of these guys.
My point to you was going to be that your 16 caps to me are worth a great deal more than the guys these days that get 50 who you could pass by in the street and you wouldn't recognise them.
Well, that's right, you know, when you consider as well that Jimmy Johnson didn't get many caps when you think of that. Gordon Smith, that played here with the famous five. I don't think Gordon Smith got many Scottish caps.
No.
And you're talking about one of the best players to play here. But I think it'd be truthful to say that in my opinion over the years, you felt that maybe the old firm got the benefit of the doubt. If it came down to you and one of the players, there was no doubt about it, you know. Because I remember I got picked to go as an overage player when I was with the Celtic to, I think it was Czechoslovakia. Bobby Clark and I were overage players, well overage. And I remember talking to Steen about it, and he says, you don't want to go, do you? And I said, no. He says, I'll tell you why you don't want to go. And I was in my 30s, you know, I just joined the Celtic. And he says, I'll tell you why you don't want to go. And I says, why? He says, well, when you were younger and you felt that you should have been going, you weren't picked. I says, that exactly. I says, that's right. He says, but go, I'll not do you any harm. And I went. But yeah, he knew as well. You know, so, but there's no but anybody saying different. I do get a benefit of that.
Around about 72, 73, you were getting a lot of caps, and yet you didn't get the 74 World Cup.
That's right.
And Willie Orban was the manager then, and you think Willie might have a wee sympathy towards the good football Hibs were playing at that time.
That was just his choice, you know. There were some good players there, but that's the way it panned out.
Because George Connolly broke his leg. And Scotland had to pick another player, and they picked Peter Cormack because he was down at Liverpool at the time. A lot of people felt that they should have went with yourself.
That was it. Disappointing, but when you think back, you got. I think even just getting a cap, your first cap. You know, to think you're the people that play football, and on that occasion you get your cap, you're playing for the team, and then on a 2 or 3 occasions I captained the Scotland team. And now if somebody had told me when I was playing for St Francis Primary and Craig Miller that one day I'd be captain Scotland at football, I'd be more chancy singing with Frank Sinatra or something like that. But there was great times for me. I was lucky with a lot of times in 16, maybe should have been more, but I think that was a great honour, you know, the captain of your country. Mm-hmm. Terrific.
Now, in 1970, you were Scottish Footballer of the Year, which is a great prestigious thing to get, because Celtic reached the European Cup final that year.
That's right.
And it shows you the how highly you must have been thought of in the game. Mm-hmm. When you beat some of the great Celtic team into winning that. So that must have been, you must have been very proud of that.
Oh, that's right. Funny, I hadn't noticed that. It was somebody pointed out to me that, you know, that was the year that Celtic were in the final. And I won it, you know, and I thought, God, when you think of what they've done and the players that they've got, yeah, that was great. That was terrific.
So, things didn't work out so well at the end of your time at Easter Road, and I think you were in dispute with the club at one point.
That's right.
Before you got a transfer. I'll tell you a funny story. I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and he said that him and his mate for the army were in a chip shop, believe it or not, in Lothian Road, and they bumped into you literally in the chip shop, and they were big admirers of you, so they introduced themselves, and you were a decent guy, and you were talking about football, and that this guy said, you know, Pat, I'd love to see you at Celtic Park. And you said, son, that did dream come true. And they put the Rangers boy turned around and he says, I'd love to see you at Ibrox. To which you replied, no, son, I kicked with the ring foot. Right? And the members, I laugh at that at the
That's
time
right, yeah.
But within a matter of months, then the transfer came about. How did it come about?
Well, like I say, I was I think maybe at the end of the day I'd been here too long, you know. I was at the end of the career. Ed, I wasn't seeing eye to eye with Eddie. He was still playing me in midfield, where I preferred to play at the back. Mm-hmm. Which I did.
See, I remember you as a midfielder because you scored a lot of goals.
Aye. But I felt at that time I'd just maybe been here too long and maybe needed a change of scenery. But I can remember I was meant to be playing against Hearts Reserves that night at Tynecastle, and I was just going out the door and the phone went, and it was Eddie Turnbull, who had never phoned me in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew something was up. I knew, and I thought, you know, what's this? After the sort of initial sort of banter, I'm saying to myself, when's he going to get to what he's really on for? And he says, I've got Mr. Steen here to speak to you. He says, would you speak to him? I said, of course I would. And Joe came on the phone and he says, how would you like to come and play for Celtic? Imagine getting asked that. Mm-hmm. You know, and how he, oh, I says, what? I said, of course I would. And I heard him turning to Eddie and saying to Eddie, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I met him through Celtic Park. I met him actually at the Banton Hotel. Mm-hmm. He said, he'd just come through the night. I don't know, I think they were playing Dundee United or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through and signed, you know. I remember going up to my dad, you know. My dad felt as well that maybe the tide would move away if a chance came up. But in those days, you know, if you moved. Mm-hmm. After having...
Well, let me ask you something. See your peak. But when you were getting Scotland caps and you were one of the best players in Scotland, did you ever get the chance to go to England?
Those people I got.
Because you when Cormac is away and Cropley is away and you know, like some of your teammates, did you never feel that I'm next? You know,
there was talk of Man United and Tottenham, and Chelsea, and teams mm-hmm. like that. To be fair to the club, though, you know, when these things cropped up. Hibs were very good, you know. They said, do you want to go? And well,
so you actually had a chance?
There was a approaches, you know. So,
I was always under the impression that you were one of the players that Hibs drew the line at McCanny Sale Paxton. He's the captain. He's the major asset. Yeah. We need to keep him.
Well, they did get I knew I was aware of it. You know, mm-hmm. whether the club went along with it. But to be fair to the club came back to me and said, mm-hmm. listen, mm-hmm. if you stay here, we'll do this, mm-hmm. we'll do that. And that was at a time when. I was playing at a time when people didn't move about so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know people moved to the, you know, now they're moving all over the place, but in those days, you know, Billy Bremner played with Leeds, and mm-hmm. Billy McNeil played with the Celtics,
right.
John Gregg played with the Rangers, and I was with the Hibs, and the people moved.
And not only were they great players, they were great captains.
Yeah, aye.
Great. Like yourselves.
Aye, so. But it just didn't work out that way, and I just stayed there, and then the Celtic thing came up. But mm-hmm. I remember I went up to tell my dad, you know, and. Just a Hibs supporter, my dad, you know. And I said, Junk Steen wants me to go and play for the Celtic. And he says to me, what did you say? I says, I would think about it. You know, he says, what's there to think about? You know, he couldn't mm-hmm. believe it. He says, Celtic asking you to play for them.
Mm-hmm.
I says, I'm going to go. He says, oh, he says, good. He says, I thought you were making a mistake there. Mm-hmm. That's putting it mildly, aye. For me, at my age.
Well, another wee thing to say there, but I was playing football in a back court in Glasgow that night, and my dad, it was a, 76 was a cracking summer. It seemed that every night it was a sunny night. And they're playing football, and my dad jumped the window and he said, mate, come in, Celtic, it's on the news, Celtic are about to sign somebody. But they don't said who it is. So he goes running in to Scotland Today or whatever programme it was. And the guy says, big shock news in Scottish football. He says, Pat Stanton today joined Celtic from Hibs. Uh-huh. And I went, oh no. My dad said, what is it? Pat Stanton, he's finished. You know what I mean? He's in his 30s. And in those days, when a player got to 30, that was almost it, you know.
Right.
And people's mind that was you past your best. And my dad laughing says, that's the best thing, signing Celtic I made for years. That team needs an old head in the team, experience. He says, and I'll guarantee you, he will do well. Mm-hmm. And he always taught me, but when I was watching you playing, he says, it's an education to watch past that. Because there was one game I remember, I think it was Somerset Park, and there was a mud bath. And the players come off the park at the end of the game and they've got mud in their face, mud in their legs, the jerseys are caked in it. And you had white shorts on and they were pristine condition at the end of it, because you didn't need to dive into mad tackles and all the rest of the stuff. You just read the game.
Aye. But I would say, I remember, there'd be someone, I remember when I first started here, when Steen was here, mm-hmm. I remember him saying, well, I played at the back with John McNamee. And he says, didn't he dive in? He says, you're no good sitting on your backside. You stay on your feet, see what they're going. Didn't you make the first move? And that was that, you know. So.
And your Celtic debut was against Rangers?
It was against Rangers, 2-8 it was. Mm-hmm. Paul Wilson.
We were 2-0 done, and you know, things that were a bit bleak, to be honest. And then the team rallied, and they end up, they might even have won it.
That's
that
right.
Must have been a. Some experience.
Well, I played in, I think my first game, aye, that's right, but I played in midfield, but he had taken me there to play at the back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now I hadn't played in, the last time I had played at the back was with John McNamee way back in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to Celtic, I played maybe the first game or two in midfield, but then I went to play at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said to me that day that I met him out at the Barrington to go through and sign for Celtic, he says, what's happening? He says, we're losing too many silly goals.
Yeah.
And people are not paying attention. He says, when the ball's at the other end of the park and Celtic are pressing, which they normally do,
mm-hmm.
he says, we're going to sleep at the back and we're losing bad goals. He says, and that's your job. You're here. Just, mm-hmm. just pay attention. I hardly went over the halfway line.
Mm-hmm.
Roddy McDonald went and attacked everything. Mm-hmm. And Big Jock says, just assume that he's going to miss it. You make sure you're at the back.
Mm.
I don't think Roddy missed a ball all season.
Well, I did an interview with Andy Hunch a few months ago, and he says that exactly what you said, they're losing too many goals, and him and Danny are bombing forward and attack. And Andy says, I was always conscious of the fact when I was up the park and teams played the ball over his head, there was a big gap for it to run into.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it was amazing. He says that he says when you arrived, he says you read it. It's every time the ball got played into the space where Andy was, you covered it, and Andy says that was fantastic. Knowing that somebody was there and could mop it up.
That's right, aye. But it was just, and we had great, you know, the players that we had, you know. Danny as well, you know.
Mm.
What a player, you know.
Danny was at his peak then.
Oh, mm. What a player he was. You just get a game any player and you would do something with it. We had some really good players there.
Mm.
Really good players. Andy, steady, because was Andy not originally a winger?
He was to begin with, and he got converted to left back.
Aye. But
fast player.
That's right. Man, when I always think of, when anybody mentions Andy, he, great personality, fully fun, you know, great sense of humour, but terrific player. He could hand it out, you know. And sometimes when Andy was injured, Tommy Burns would come in.
Mm-hmm. And, he was on my boy then.
Good player. You could see he was a good player. Mm-hmm. Roy Aiken, somebody told me Roy was only about 17, 18. I couldn't believe it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What a player he was as well. But Ronnie Glavin, Bobby Lennox, you know.
Johnny Doyle was a character of
Johnny. Johnny, aye. Great, terrific. You know, he used to come to the games with a Celtic scarf in his hand, you know. I think Big Joe told him to stop that. But, aye, Doyle, Doyle and Ronnie Glavin, they were big pals, you know. But you didn't know what was going to happen next, you know.
Well, that was a fantastic season, and it's a regret that you played something stupid like 20 minutes in some League Cup tie. Aye. That's cup tied you for the Celtic games in the League Cup.
That's right, that's right. It was just one of these things. It was.
Of course, you weren't to know.
That's right, you didn't know what was going to happen, aye.
But we go to the final and we get beat by Aberdeen in extra time. And the two goals you lost that day were painful. And everybody knew if you were at the back. And another thing as well, if Joe Craig was up front, we'd missed a lot of chances.
That's right.
We would have won that cup. So it just wasn't to be.
That's right. But you're right. You see, I came on here for a game and I think the game was well finished. You know, you could have taken the players off. And I went on and that was me cup time.
Now, the fate's a funny thing. And Celtic won the league by a margin that season. And as it would happen, they won it at Easter Road. Now, you're hardly out the door at Easter Road and you came back. What kind of feeling was that day?
Well, that was terrific, you know. You know, after all these years of playing here, and then to come back here and win the championship.
Even getting in the away dressing room must have been a bit weird.
And just seeing the boys, you know, and the times, yeah. And, you know, it was funny, in that dressing room, when the final whistle went and we're champions, you know, and a lot of great players play other days and didn't win a thing, you know, but just to be sitting there. But when I was sitting in that dressing room having won the league, I remember the day that when I first started here as a player, we used to have the public trials, you know, the possibles against the probables, and I can remember sitting in the away dressing room all the years ago as a laddie. And the old trainer came around with the jerseys and handing out the jerseys who would be playing that day against the first team. And he passed me by. I didn't get picked to go on. And I thought, and it was only when I think that all changed the following season, you know, when I got picked to play for the reserves. But that was a major disappointment. It just made you all more determined to do well. And who would have thought when that day that was sitting there getting disappointed, because I was just a laddie, and getting disappointed like that, and the man passed, it wasn't his choice, it was somebody else had picked the team. He'd be sitting there in the same dressing room with all these great players with that great club winning the league championship.
Tom Hardlock, if you remember, he banned the cameras that day.
That's correct.
And I always felt, actually, it was only a personal feeling that he was raging that you were coming back.
Well, funny, we won the championship that, you know, and it was great, you know, in the dressing room after the game. But none of them came through.
Not one?
Nobody came through to say, look, well done.
We're pleased for you.
Having all these years, spent all these years in the other dressing room, that was the kind of guys they were, you know, petty.
And yet, there's another story that I'm going to recall. You were going for the full set of medals a few weeks later when we played Rangers in the Scottish Cup final. And before the game, you get a telegram for your old pals at the players.
That's right, I did.
Actually sitting in the dressing room?
Yeah, the players, aye. That was great.
So who would that have been? Brownlee and Blackley?
Oh, George Stewart, John Blackley, all these guys, Cropley, O'Rourke, who's my
apparently big Jot, wasn't he pleased to answer the door and find out there was a telegram, but... Yeah, I think we've been to find out who it was for. You realised that it meant a lot.
That's to these guys, you know, because like Gerard was, I played school, same school team as Jimmy, and I can remember the following day after the cup final, because I'd won the League Cup here, league,
and you had the full set,
and then and it was a Sunday morning, and the phone went, and it was Jimmy. Jimmy's. He's not the easiest guy in the world to get on with, you know. He's an offy man, but good friend, you know, one of the guys, but doesn't he suffer fools? He came on the phone. I don't know if it was my wife or one of the bairns answered the door, answered the phone. It was Jimmy, and he came on and he says, that's good. He says, you've got the three medals, and put the phone down. And my wife says, who was that? I says, that was Jimmy. I says, he wasn't on very long. I says, no, he said what he had to say. And I've said it to him, I said, I always remember him for finding the time that Sunday morning to phone me. You know, football's a hard game, you can get cynical, but there's wee things happening that you say, that's not too bad.
I'm going to digress a wee bit, but some of the reports I've read, that Great Hibs team at the time, a lot of them left for quite acrimonious circumstances. I think even Jim O'Rourke was a bit peeved when he got transferred. So they deserve better. They deserve a better farewell than what they got.
That's right. That's right. The way some of them were just moved on. We know it's a hard game. You know, it's a tough game. I remember Bertie Auld saying that the one thing this game will guarantee is disappointment, and it will do that. But there's doesn't have to be that hard, you know. It doesn't take much for even like say when I left here the morning, the day that I left Easterwood, I came in here. It was Wednesday night. I met Jock at Celtic Park to sign and all that. But I came in here on Thursday morning to pick my boots up. And Tom McNiven, the trainer, was here. terrific guy, and he gave me my boots and whatever. And he says, "Good luck with your club." You know. Mm-hmm. So the players were okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was nobody for the board.
Senior management were missing.
Nobody wished you all the best. I hadn't been here 5 minutes. I had been here 14 seasons.
Best year of your life, even.
And you walked out. I walked out the door that morning. The Hibs were off that day. They were, I think they'd played the night before. But like I say, I walked to the door with my boots under my arm, like a trialist. And I said, "Is that all there is?" Nobody had the. But maybe I don't know if it was the chairman or whoever. But the rest of them were frightened to phone you.
Yeah.
You know, and I went, "Well, if that's the kind of folk you are, you know, I wouldn't be bothered to you." But it was. I didn't like them. They probably didn't like me, but I couldn't care less about them. You know.
No, we're getting to the sad part here because the first game of the 77-78 season, you get carried off injured. But was it a knee injury?
A knee injury. Yeah.
So, talk me through that. Was it a freak or was it a bad tackle?
I think I'd been having, you know, I hadn't been bothered with my knee. It was just getting wee twinges here and there. But it was the first game of the season, like you're saying. It was Dundee United. And a ball got played by me, and I just went to turn, and I felt it, you know, going. And a feeling I'd never had that before. And I remember I managed to get it to half time, and Bob Rooney, you know, put a hot towel around it, you know, whatever. And he said, "Just give it a try," you know. But I tried it in the start of the second half, but I knew, and playing at the back, you couldn't afford to make mistakes. And I felt it, and I just said, "I need to go, you know, you get me off," and that was me. And I got the operation. I was out for about I got hepatitis, and I was out for about a whole year.
It was a full season.
That's right, and it was just. But when I look back, you know, it was disappointing because I could have played on for a while had that not happened. But I could have got that thing at the start of my career, but I didn't. And I was managed to get, you know, play up to that stage. So disappointed, very disappointed.
Well, the point I'm going to make is that I read it something recently, and I thought you just retired because you couldn't get back to playing, but you played a couple of pre-season games in 78,
yeah,
and then right out of the blue one weekend you just called it quits. Do you regret being a bit hasty?
No, what you're saying there, but I remember. I think it's we played Montrose.
It was Montrose, Links Park.
That's right. Played Montrose, and there were things, and at the back you can't afford mistakes, you know. And I felt there was things there. I was taking longer. I knew it was pre-season, and it might have picked up as the season went by, but you've not got that luxury. And I felt just didn't feel comfortable, you know. I just felt, you know, this is no, nah, it's not there. And. And I went in that day. It was Big Billy was the manager.
He just took over.
And I just went in and I says, he says, "Are you sure now?" I says, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure now." I says, "There's wee things in my game that have suddenly appeared that are not." I says, "Maybe if I'd played on a two or three more games, it would have been okay." But I felt I didn't want to let anybody down, you know. He says, "Well, fine, we respect your judgment," and that was fine. But they were great about it, you know. That was the last thing I wanted to do.
No, we were gutted as fans as well.
Aye, but I felt that's the time to call it a quits. You know, it's been great.
There was one last thing. You get a testimonial, and it was through here at Easter Road, and there was 30,000 there. The place was jumping, and there was a huge Celtic support come through, but it shows you the esteem in which we held you as well.
It was a miserable day.
It was freezing.
It was miserable, aye. And I remember saying to my wife, I was standing in the back garden. And
yeah, it was late April as well, wasn't it? It was the winter, it was quite unseasonable.
I says, you know, I says, look at this, you know, look at the weather, you know. And when we got here, we're in the dressing room and I was speaking to Big Steen and I says, what day? You know, I says, imagine the odd days to have it like this. And he says, don't you worry, he says, they're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Big plum, and even the hip support that day. It was a great day for me. And it really was.
People remember at half time that there was a flute band in the park at half time. You might not be aware of that because you were in the dressing room, but.
I'll tell you the one about. The guy, the day before, it was a couple of days before, a guy came on the phone and he says, hey, we're some flute band for.
Wishaw, was it Wishaw?
And they'd been away somewhere. They'd been away. And the boy says, you know, and right away you're sort of. And he says, and he obviously all read my mind. I went, play Scottish tunes, he says.
He says.
And I said, that's fine. I said, that'll be okay. I says, as long as. And he says, I know what you mean.
Uh-huh.
I said, do you want anyway? Hiya. And they were in the dressing room before the game, and the police inspector comes in the dressing room and says, where did this band come from? And I went, well, that's the band. The boy phoned me, he says they'd come through and play.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, have you seen them? I said, no, and some of them had the berries on
them.
I says, but they'd just play Scottish tunes.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no problem. He says, they're fine. He says, they're not bad like that. But at half time, he came in to me at half time and he says to me, he says, the flute band, he says, would you say they were just going to play Scottish songs? I says, aye, that's what he said. Well, right now they're up there at the Celtic end and it's no. He says, no. He says, we'll need to get them. He says, it's great. He says, it's not, they're not, anybody's been offended.
That's
he says, but we prefer if they. But I soak in it and leave him. But the boys were great. It was.
And the other thing about your testimony is, well, a lot of guys gave their time up to come for you. I mean, guys like Alan Ruff and Joe Jordan and Jimmy Johnson, I think. It was Tommy Gemmell. There was a lot of guest players that day as
that's
well.
That's right, aye, Big Tam. And because I remember Jimmy had retired, didn't he?
Jimmy was
speaking about players that he would bring, and he says, now remember, he says, make sure Jimmy's nice and fit for this game, he says, because he was a great player, he says, and we want to see a great player here again, and he was outstanding.
Well, the funny thing about your testimony was that it was the first time I went on a school trip outside Glasgow, and we went to Edinburgh for the weekend, and they said to the teacher, Celtic's playing Hibs on Sunday at the Patch Dance Testimony, can we go? And he said, no, we're going to the castle, right? So we're marching along Princess Street, and I recall it was bitter, bitter cold. And these days in Princess Street, the traffic was flowing, and there were Celtic buses on their way to Easter Road. Now we come from Govan, and our wee school in Govan, St Anthony's, and I always remember this bus pulled up, and the windies are getting hammered, and we looked up. Now my dad wasn't there certainly, but I guarantee you that half the kids' fathers that were there were on the supporters bus, and it just stopped right at the traffic lights where we were crossing.
Uh-huh.
And I always remember that being a bit freaky. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And the feathers were all chapping the windies as their kids are getting led across the road to go to the castle.
Uh-huh.
And they were on their way to your testimony.
I know,
on
the way
for
amazing, golf. Eh?
So
aye, but I can remember because we had a wee thing after that. My dad met Steen. And the last time my dad had met Steen, he tried to sign me for Dunfermline at Old Meadow Bank. All these years had gone by, and he was not standing talking to Steen. So when Steen was away, he was away to speak to somebody else, and my dad says, you know, he says, you're very fortunate. And my dad didn't speak like that. You know, he didn't. He kept his feelings to himself. He says, you've been very fortunate. He says, and I says, how? He says, not many people get this. He says, and it's our supporters that are making it the day.
That's right.
He says, these people standing there, they make this what it is.
Mm.
It's like John Steen says, you know, if you've not got the fans, you've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly, my old man said that, and I remember him saying that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was you retired.
Yeah.
And
Thanks.
Another wee adventure started, and I'm curious about this because Alec Ferguson made you as assistant manager at Aberdeen.
Aye.
When Aberdeen came to the fore and won the league title in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember thinking you were a great foil for Ferguson. Ferguson, you know, he flies off the handle at the first opportunity. He's an aggressive guy, and you and I've only met you for the first time today. You're very relaxed and you're very calm, and I think that would have been a great match, and yet you didn't last long at Aberdeen.
No, I left. It was my choice just to leave, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said that my family hadn't really settled in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Great though it was, I think my family preferred to be back here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
do you sort of regret it, given what happened with the success?
Well,
that
looking,
you
know? Back, looking back, when you went from strength to strength, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, when he went up there, he had to settle things in a bit,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But looking back, possibly, but I got well with him.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Really well with him.
That was my point. You were a good sort of contrast to him.
Aye.
You know, in terms of your nature.
Yeah, and you know, this when he first went there was players there at Pittodrie that he had actually played against.
Mm.
And I think one or two of them were maybe just no
mm-hmm.
helping them all that much, you know. And because I can remember speaking to him one day, and there were a couple of results that hadn't quite gone for us. And there was one or two players that just weren't exactly
pulling
away. Mm-hmm. And I says, you know, he says, we're just playing away. I said, well, what you've got to do, Alec? And he says, get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
I says, oh, I'll get rid of you.
That's right.
And he says, I need that. We moved people on, good enough players, but only quite doing it for them. And then a lot of the young players started to come through on there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you did, he, I just sort of he'd maybe go fire off at things, and I would just go got his back sort of calming things down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he didn't really mean that. I used to say, look, if he's shouting at you, he must think you've got something to offer. I says, because if he didn't, he wouldn't be shouting at you. I says, you wouldn't be here. I says, oh, did you think that? I says, no, that's a fact. I says, if he wouldn't have wasted time talking to you.
So the last chapter in your career is you became Hibs manager.
Yeah.
And my recollection of that is that was it Kenny Waugh?
Oh, that was...
Right, so it wasn't an easy time for you?
Difficult time, it really was, but there had been... Things had been going bad here for a wee while, you know, and it just... The players, good players had left, and the players that came in weren't quite the same level of player, you know.
Mm.
Times had changed, the type of player, where you were getting your players. You know, years ago you'd bring in your own young players, you know, you'd go back to the Celtic, you know, with the Kenny Dalglishes and all them that came through at that time. Now it's guys coming from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them maybe know that clever at times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same then, the players that had left weren't they replaced with players that were as good as them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, that reflects where you are in the league and the cup and all that sort of stuff.
I remember going to the Easter Road Social Club before. We used to go in there for a pint before the Celtic Hibs games at Easter Road. And there's a couple of recollections of what the first one was. I think it was Alec Moore at the time that was the manager, and he was getting a hard time. And I was talking to this Hibs fan, and he says, people get us the wrong way here because they think because Miller's fake Glasgow and he's a Knight Rangers man that we don't take to him.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we know, but we're a good chance for no one to win things. He says, but the one thing we've always said at East Road is we get entertained.
Mm-hmm.
The team went to the park, played a certain fashion for the famous five, right through the sixes, Teddy Turnbull's team, even right, you know, maybe just beyond that. He says, mm-hmm. the Hibs teams were always expected to play in a certain fashion. And he said to me is, we'll always be happy as long as we're getting entertained.
Aye. Well, I think the Hibs support are the last of the romantics. Eh?
Mm.
That's just their way, you know. And even if you look at the record in the cup, which is not that clever, you know, and long ago, 1902. But they still live in hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be happening someday, hopefully it does. A lot of people that have come and gone and Hibs never won the cup. People might, you know, the heart supporters Hearts have done well. They've won the cup when Hibs are low, but it's a wee thing for Hibs to look forward to.
I know.
If nothing
that,
else,
that would be a notable achievement if they could get.
Oh, I think they'd be
a Scottish Cup if
light up the castle. Or, but it, like I say, despite all that, the disappointment, there's been bitter disappointments. You know, good teams no winning it. And, you know, I was at the Clyde game when Hibs got beat
58.
You know, I was there with my dad, you know, and that was with Joe Baker and Eddie Turnbull playing that team. But that was a disappointment. But it'll happen one day.
Well, I think a good way of rounding things off is to say that full Celtic fans, to thank you for your short period. It's a pity it couldn't have been a wee bit longer for what you did for Celtic, but also to say that that wish Alan Stubbs and the Hibs team the best work for this season.
Oh, come on, I'm sure he's doing well, you know, but going back to the Celtic thing, I went through there and it couldn't have been nicer. I was there a great deal of time. I'd love to have been staying longer, it was just unfortunate. But, you know, just to go through there and play with great players. You know, I'd played here with great players, Brownlees and Cropleys and all these guys, and to go through there and play with Danny and Kenny and all these other guys, I've been very lucky.
Well, you were a great player in your own right, so you were in good company.
Oh, it was good. I had a great time with them, and it was like I say, very fortunate. And I look back, and my oldest son, he's a Celtic man because I took him when I had my injury. I would take him to the games and give me the boy and I'll give you the man. I should never have done that. That's brought him here.
But no, that doesn't seem right, patching that his boy supporting Celtic.
I know, but he's a real Celtic man, and his brother, he's a Hib supporter, you know. But it was an absolute privilege to go. You know, like I say, at my stage of my career in the old days, you would finish up by say the Hibs or the Hearts and Dundees or Aberdeens, and you'd go and play for maybe one of the teams in the other leagues, lower leagues. I went to Celtic after all these years here, you know. It's what a move for me. I couldn't believe it, you know. But and the way it worked out for me, couldn't have been better. So I'm looking back over the piece, very fortunate.
Well, we'll end there, Pat. That's great. Thanks very much for your time, and wish you all the very best for the future.
Thanks very much.
My heart was broken, my heart was broken.
I know, but I couldn't really end it any other way, could I? Apart from having that tune. Do you know, if there was ever going to be a time where I see Celtic not win a double or a treble due to somebody beating us in a Scottish Cup final, the one team that I would maybe not be quite so angry about would be if Hibs finally broke their hoodoo and won their Scottish Cup. Anyway, that's my guy growing up in the early 70s when Hibs were on the fringes of challenging. Never mind, hope you enjoyed that chat with Pat Stanton and St Anthony. And for those heroes who slept out on the in the main stand as the rain was lashing down last week at Celtic Park as part of the Celtic FC Foundation's Christmas appeal and raising funds for homelessness and awareness for homelessness, thanks very much. You did a fantastic job and well done, bringing once again great credit to our club. There are a number of other Celtic FC Foundation events coming up, and of course we have the AGM coming up on Friday. If you're listening to this before Friday, we can all play our AGM bingo of people interested, and with whether Dermot turns up, Jeanette Finlay telling the board they're a bunch of assholes, that type of thing. And then it is on to podcast 267. So enough from me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying congratulations to the person who won the early years, the Celtic, the early years book, following on from the St Anthony's podcast. If you're now listening to this podcast, entries are now closed for that competition, and St Anthony will be contacting the winning person very shortly. But that is me, Harry Brady, saying God bless and good night. Good night.
you touched it, you saved it. While I'm one, my room on the side.